You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
This week's bits. The best news nuggets from Breakfast and The Wire from this week.
Atamaria, good morning and welcome to this week's bits. Ko Hannah Ross, Tōku Ingoa. Here are the best news bits of this week. The Australian-run detention centre on Manus Island, Papua New Guinea, was shut down. We found out more about what will be happening. We spoke to Green Party leader James Shaw about NZ's current refugee quota and what action we could be taking. And we also talked about the plans to abolish national standards for primary schools. First up, the Australian-run detention centre on Manus Island, Papua New Guinea, was shut down after Papua New Guinea's Supreme Court ruled its existence unconstitutional. Around 600 asylum seekers are determined to stay in the detention centre due to fears of violence by locals and police. There are reports of the refugees filling rubbish bins with rainwater due to the water supply being cut off, and reports of locals looting the camp. Producer Ruben McLaren spoke to Amnesty International's Kate Schuzitz, who is currently on Manus Island, to find out more.
Yeah, so we're here on Manus Island looking into what's happening around the closure of the centre, which is supposed to happen yesterday. Essentially, all that happened yesterday was the Australian officials at the centre pulled out very early in the morning. We heard reports that there are some locals who came in and took some items from the centre. We've since heard this morning that the has now been cut to Mike as well as Foxtrot compounds, and one of the refugees was telling me this morning via messaging that he's charging his phone for what he believes to be the last in the Oscar compound on a very small generator before those power facilities are cut too.
So do you think there's possibly going to be some kind of entry by police or military? I also understand a private security group may also be involved.
Well, there's a range of actors here that make the situation, you know, just impossible for the refugees. So they're receiving some threats and they've experienced some violence in the community, and the police haven't acted on some of those complaints, if that's what the refugees have. We do have David Yaffe, the provincial police commander, saying some positive things this morning, that he doesn't want to see them any use of force to move the refugees from the centre. We haven't had any clear statements from the Papua New Guinea Defence Force, and of course they operate under a different chain of command. Then of course we've got the issue of individuals and private companies like the security contractors that are here. We don't really know what role they're playing because that hasn't publicly been announced. We really don't know what the intentions are at this stage. All I can tell you is that the refugees are incredibly anxious and very fearful for their situation in the centre in Mombram here today.
And can you tell me about what the mood is like with the locals? Have you had a chance to talk to them about how they feel about it all?
Yeah, so we met with the local group and they told us that they were planning a peaceful protest yesterday, which I understand went ahead. They call themselves Manus People for Human Rights, or against human rights abuses, and they're essentially calling on the Australian government to take responsibility for the refugees. And the way they put it to me is what we want is our number one call is for the Australian government to accept its responsibility to the refugees and take them back to Australia. So, it is good to see that some locals engaging with the refugees and supporting them in their calls, but essentially there's also a wide mix of views in the local community here. We've also heard from people who have had attacks and assaults in the community, robberies in town and things like that. So I think we have to also recognise the extraordinary pressure it puts on a very small isolated community to essentially dump 700 refugees on the island.
And in terms of resettling, how likely do you think it is that, considering the change of government in New Zealand, that New Zealand will take some of them in?
Well, I mean, essentially we say the responsibility ultimately rests with Australia. They're the ones who can stop this right now by ending offshore process and bringing these people to Australia. I think now, though, that they've failed to meet obligations for refugee protection over the last four and a half years, we would absolutely say that other countries can now enough to take the refugees and end that uncertainty. So we've seen 25 people go to the US and some people have been in touch with those people. We just don't know what's happening next with that deal, how long it's going to take. and this prolonged uncertainty is just causing more anguish for the refugees. So absolutely, New Zealand should step up its offer. It should start to engage with the Papua New Guinean government on that offer, and anything that brings an end to the suffering for the refugees is something that we would support.
In regards to all of or some of the refugees going to Australia, how likely do you think that is?
Well, it's a very difficult one to answer because seen consistently in the political landscape, there hasn't been a lot of support for protecting people fleeing persecution. It's very unfortunate. But having said, it's not impossible for government to change their government policy. There just needs to be the willpower there. And I think what we need to do now to, keep the pressure on in terms of highlighting the human rights abuses which are now happening here on Manus now, and how Australia can stop that.
You said before that an authority said force will not be used to remove the refugees. How much credence would you give that?
I think the challenge is that statement came from the PNG police commander for the region. We also have police mobile squads based at the centre. They don't always report to the local provincial police commander. They usually report to someone in Port Moresby. So we have multiple actors here, all armed, all here to play a certain role, and it's not clear what's going to happen next. And I guess PNG is quite a volatile place. It's very unpredictable in terms of what might happen next.
Green Party member Gulruz Gahram has called out to New Zealand to take more action on Manus Island. New Zealand's current refugee population sits at around 0.3 per capita. This is around 30 to 40 times lower than world leaders. Wire host Joel Thomas talked to Green Party leader James Shaw about why this is and what needs to change.
We were very critical of the last government in terms of the lack of advocacy about Manus Island that they took to the Australian government. We felt that they were really softballing it and that they should have maintained a firmer line on humanitarian grounds.
We haven't entirely been silent. New Zealand has offered to take in 150 refugees in 2013, which the Australian government rejected. Why do you think they rejected this?
I would be speculating, but I suspect that it was because they felt it would be embarrassing for it to be seen for New Zealand to be kind of picking up the slack, if you like.
Okay, and so Labor has confirmed they will continue to work on taking in 150 refugees from the offshore detention centres, but there's almost 800 prisoners in Manus Island and almost 2,000 people, in offshore detention. So is 150 enough?
Well, we have to sort of balance that against our ability to take in refugees. And at the moment, we've actually got kind of fairly limited capacity. We have a very good refugee resettlement program here in New Zealand, and of course we are looking to expand that significantly over the coming 12 months.
Why do you think we're at limited capacity?
Because we only built limited capacity, and because we only fund the agencies who are who support refugees when they arrive to a maximum amount. And that is something that, if you look at the agreement that we have between the Greens and New Zealand First, that we are going to be looking at how we support those agencies and expand that capacity in future.
So our current refugee quota is increasing from 750 to 1,000, and Labor pledged to increase it to 1,500. But considering New Zealand only has 0.31% of refugees per 1,000 people, it's extremely low compared to countries like Sweden, who have around 40 times that number, and Norway have 30 times that number. So do we need to put more funding into these agencies to support refugees? Is that
what
we need to do?
Okay. Absolutely, we do. Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, in fact, when you talk about Sweden and other countries, that's correct. Actually, in fact, even Australia, who, aren't exactly famous for their record when it comes to refugee resettlement, they actually take in about 4 to 5 times as many refugees per capita as New Zealand does. So New Zealand, I mean, like I said, we've got a very, very good internationally recognised resettlement program, but it is very limited in terms of the numbers. And that is something that the Green Party campaigned on quite strongly over the last few years, and we look forward to supporting this government to expand both the capacity of the agencies and the facility to ensure that we are starting to pull our weight internationally in terms of those numbers.
How long do you think it'll take for us to start pulling our weight?
I think you'd need to talk to the new Minister for Immigration about that, but it will take a while because, of course, you've got, you know, it's not just a matter of hiring people and having new facilities available, but you've actually got to make sure that those people are well-trained and qualified, because refugee resettlement is something that takes, highly qualified staff and agencies to be able to do that. And so it's not something that you can do instantly. It's something that you actually have to spend some time building the capacity of those agencies to be able to absorb the demand. And so that is something that we're going to start with fairly promptly, I would imagine.
Labor has planned to scrap national standard for primary schools. We spoke to National MP Nikki Kaye about her criticisms of the policy.
Firstly, you know, the whole point of national standards is that we ensure that parents and teachers have a good understanding of how children are doing in reading and writing and math. Mm-hmm. That's really important, particularly for those kids that might be struggling. And Labor have announced that they're going to get rid of national standards without the clear detail of the system that they're going to replace it with. Now, we campaigned in this election on shifting to student progress, which we're supportive of, but it seems wrong to me to be saying you're going to scrap something without having a very detailed system to replace it with.
Just following on from that, the new Education Minister, Chris Hipkins, says schools would be able to choose their own way of assessing children's progress. And then in their policy, it says that the primary schools will still have to report to parents on individual students' progress against the 8 levels of curriculum. Why do you see this as not a viable option?
Well, it's because there is no major detail. Those are statements, but what matters is how do you moderate between the information that you're getting at the centre. So how do you have confidence in the different ways that schools are reporting? What is the detail of what will actually be reported? What will parents actually get guaranteed? The Education Minister has made some high-level statements, but that is not the replacement for a detailed system, including tools.
So in your experience, why is it so important to have this communication between schools and the government nationally?
Well, it's not just between schools and the government. It's also about between schools and parents. And it's really important for several reasons. Firstly, if we want to know where we need to be able to help invest resources for those schools that need it because children might be struggling, then we need to have good, clear information about where that's happening. That's why we, you know, initially brought a national standard. Secondly, we want parents to have good information about how their children are doing so that they can be involved in their learning.
So do you view that the schools, therefore, will not be able to provide adequate information to the parents without the framework of national standards?
No. What I'm saying is that we oppose getting rid of national standards. We campaigned at the election actually on moving to a system of student progression. But what I'm saying is for the minister to say that he's going to get rid of a system which has had years of investment quickly without having a clear replacement, in my view, is irresponsible.
Okay, and therefore it's not adequate to
That's right. I mean, I think it's the onus is on the minister to clearly articulate what the detail is of the new system that would provide reporting to parents, but also the detail of what schools would be required to report, how they're going to have consistency, and what that looks like. And we haven't seen any of that detail yet. We're being told that national standards will be gone quickly. We also haven't had any timeframes from the minister about what that means. And so you can imagine I've got very concerned parents about at the very least wanting to see that detail.
So how has the national standards that you brought in 2010 aided education practically?
Well, I think it's done a couple of things. Again, it's enabled the government to be able to target resource to those schools where students need additional support in numeracy and literacy. That's been one benefit. The second thing is it's provided much better information for parents about how their children are doing. But that doesn't mean that there doesn't need to be improvements. And that's why, you know, there is a bit of a consensus to move to student progression. But these are huge decisions that require, in my view, very clear policy, but also clear investment. We haven't been told how much this is going to cost, but also engagement with not only education leaders but also parents. We're not seeing any of that. We're just being told that the national standards will be scrapped without any of that detail, without any time frame, and I think that's wrong.
That was this week's Bits. To listen to the full interviews, visit 95bfm.com and check out the BCasts.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/BCasts.